Blog Talk Radio.
Good
Good morning, Fastlane Sports Nation. Welcome back to the second part of our show. This show, we have Eric Westendorf. He is the track announcer with Lernerville Speedway. He'll be joining us here in just a couple seconds. He's joining us on the Barbasol Shave phone lines. The Barbasol Shave phone line number to call is always 657-383-1903. If you ever want to be on the show, if you have a question for a special guest, or during our regular show from 9 to 11 in the mornings on Saturday, if you want to call in and weigh in on one of the topics that we are talking about, that is the number to save and to call. So thank you for joining us this morning again for the second part of the show. This is Saturday Morning Sports in the Fast Lane. This is the Fast Lane Sports Show presented by Ultralight Railway Brake Sticks. And I am pleased to now bring on with us from Lernerville Speedway. Is this Eric Westendorf?
All right, how about now?
All right, there we go. I got you now.
My cheek muted my phone. I apologize.
Oh, that's all right. Good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for coming on and talking to our listeners and letting them know a little bit more about Lernerville Speedway. We're always happy to have new people on the show that we can talk to and learn more about different racetracks. So thank you for that.
Thanks for having me. I'd love to talk about Lernerville Speedway, and hopefully in the near future, now that our county has gone green here in Pennsylvania, we can actually talk about racing sometime soon.
Yeah, I did see that you guys had to cancel again last night. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm kind of taking it week by week at this point. And even though we've gone green, there's still some confusing language. Lincoln Speedway out on the other side of the state was strongly discouraged by the Department of Community and Economic Development by way of the governor to not race last Monday. They raced, they had a great car count. They had, the stands weren't packed. They kind of limited seating in the stands. But if you saw the broadcast, the infield was packed. It was a great race. They've been kind of warned and threatened that there may be some repercussions if they race this week. But my understanding is they're going to race. So, but in that letter, they were first referred to as entertainment. And if we are classified as entertainment, we can open at 50% capacity. If we are considered professional sports, which most of the drivers at our track are not professionals, they're workaday guys. They, if anything, lose money in this racing venture. But right. If that's the case, we may be limited to 250. And, there's also language in there about no spectators at a venue. So, as anything from the state, there's not a lot of clarity. So we're still working with legal, working with local, state, and county representatives to translate that, and most importantly, move forward with a plan that is going to ensure the safety of our employees, fans, and drivers.
Yeah, we're definitely keeping an eye on all of the racetracks. This show started out 4 years ago. The premise of the show has always been small town short tracks. We were never a NASCAR show, anything like that. I wanted to direct our attention on the small town short tracks, give them a voice to be heard. I'm not no ESPN or Fox Sports, so I don't have millions of listeners, but I wanted to focus my attention on tracks like Lernerville, like our home track, Wayne County Speedway, which I'm sure you've heard of.
I've been there.
Opening
I love
up
that track.
Yeah, they're actually, for the first time in 2020, opening up tonight. It's just going to be mini stocks and super stocks, no fans, no grandstands, nothing like that. But it's going to be the first race of 2020 for them. So I know they're chomping at the bit to get started. But, we see a lot of these small town short tracks. Over the last several years, Eric, we've seen several tracks close down because there just haven't been the fans or the car counts, And then this hits this year. And we see other tracks having to shut down because of this. It's sad to see, really, the small town short track dying away normally. But now, because of all this, having to cause, you guys to shut down, how much have you guys seen this affect Lernerville now in 2020 so far, with having to, you know, play it week by week and not being able to run full weekend shows every weekend, you know, since March or April?
Yeah, and you've nailed it on the head. I mean, most of these tracks are local, smaller businesses. Most tracks aren't owned by Tony Stewart, who's a multimillionaire like Eldora Speedway is. You know, thankfully, the Thompson family, who owns Lernerville Speedway, also owns, you know, a very profitable scrap yard. They have some other business entities, so that family doesn't rely on income for the track to sustain themselves. They actually haven't, they've owned the track for 3 years now, and they haven't taken a dime of profit out of that track. Everything they've made profit-wise or revenue-wise, they've reinvested into the track to improve the facilities, to improve driver safety. We just put in a 5-camera system. If you're familiar with Lernerville Straightaway or Lernerville Speedway, the back straightaway goes down a hill, and for 50 years the officials have been blind to that. So, you know, usually we see a car go over the back straightaway, but we don't know where they went. There are times that cars have gone over the back straightaway and we miss it. I mean, there's only three of us up there. I'm the announcer, the race director, and the guy in charge of scoring. And when there's 25 cars on the track, you miss things. So sometimes we don't know if someone's over the back straightaway until the fans are, you know, waving their hands. And so we've actually installed 3 cameras on a back straightaway so we can see the entire back straightaway. We can see turn 2, turn 3. So that's just, you know, one example of the type of investment that the Thompson family has made in improving driver safety. But, you know, it's frustrating because we were ready to go. you know, we had just finished our banquet. We had plans for a car show that weekend that everything got shut down. And then 2 weeks later, we were going with a couple practice sessions. And then we were racing at the end of April. And it's kind of odd because we've been really lucky weather-wise the last few years. Weather-wise around here on Friday nights, we really only would have got one or two shows in anyway, but at least we would have had a chance. And right now we don't have a chance. And, you know, completely leaving the politics out of it, it's just frustrating to not have the clarity of what we can and can't do. And we, like some other tracks, hold a liquor license. So that could be, you know, revoked, suspended if we race without clear guidance and permission. So that's just one extra tier that I think some fans don't understand. It's just not as simple as it's our constitutional right, let's go do this. Well, yeah, we believe that, but there's also a lot to lose when you own a business. And that liquor license is just one of those things.
Yeah, we had Ryan Pearson. He's the general manager of Wayne County Speedway, amongst other things there at the track. He does a lot. But we had him on a couple Saturdays ago, and he said the same thing. You know, fans are upset. You know, they want the tracks to just open and defy the states and everything. But like he said pretty much what you just said. You know, they've got a concession stand. They've got a liquor license. You know, they're trying to follow the rules that are being set forth so that they don't lose that stuff. You know, because, you know, just getting drivers to pay to come in there and race, and then the fans pay to come in to watch a race, they still also rely on that concession stand and liquor money coming in to help pay for things as well. And if you start defying the state doesn't care what your constitutional right, they'll take that stuff away from you. And now you can't sell food or beer. And that's a big income for those tracks. So, you know, they said the same thing that you just said about that. You know, the fans want the racing, but these tracks are, their hands are still tied. And that's another thing that sucks too, that I think a lot, like you said, a lot of fans just don't understand.
Yep, and you know, a few tracks around here. You know, I mentioned Lincoln. I actually went to Rory Knob last Sunday because a few of our sprint car drivers were there, and you know, one of the biggest names in the history of Lernerville Speedway, the Lynch name is iconic. Ed Lynch Sr. and Gene Lynch were both you know, Hall of Famers. Ed Lynch Jr. is known nationally for, you know, his success in sprint cars, and Cy Lynch is the son of Ed Lynch Jr. And he won the race. There were some Central and Western Ohio cars there. Danny Smith was there. Trey and RJ Jacobs were both there, to name a few. There were some PA Posse guys there. So it was great that I was there to see one of our guys, you know, win and be successful. But, you know, it was great to be at the racetrack. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there, you do, it is kind of, it's different because, you know, some people are walking around with face masks, and most of them weren't. You know, to be honest, we're out in the open air. It was nice and warm, but it's just, you know, I keep telling people it's like living in an alternate universe. I mean, you walk into stores and, you know, 2 months ago, if you walk into a store with a face mask, they call the police. They think you're robbing the place. Now, if you walk in without a face mask, they want to call the police because you're not, you know, being a good citizen. So
right.
it's interesting. But, you know, we were really primed for a great 2020 season. We had a gentleman come in with a $30,000 sponsorship for a bonus program. We had Thompson family that owns the track put a 10% increase across the board on all of our purse payouts. We had a loyalty incentive through Hubbis Auto and Truck Supply, one of the local parts dealers in our area, where if you ran 6 or 7 of our regular shows, you got a free pit pass for the driver the rest of the season. We opened up some of our rules in a couple divisions, so we were really primed to have a great season, and we just can't get on the track. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. We're talking with Eric Westendorf. He is the track announcer at Lernerville Speedway. He's joining us today on the Barbasol Shaves phone lines. Eric, let's talk a little history real quick about Lernerville for some people who might not know too much about the Speedway there. It opened in 1967 by three gentlemen who took a chance. I believe if I was reading up on my history correctly, it's on the site of the old Lernerville Amusement Park. And they actually got a fourth gentleman to come in with them who ended up changing and becoming one of the top sprint car promoters and track owners in the country and building up what we know today as Lernerville Speedway. But, you know, they brought on Don Martin. And tell us a little bit about the history and how Don Martin got involved and what he ended up doing throughout the 80s to promote the track.
Yeah, so they there was kind of a window there where they had to get something in that that season of 1967 where they would have lost the opportunity to do so. So they ran one and no more than two races that first year, but that cemented and kind of grandfathered them into something. Don Martin was a very successful local business owner, had a very large trucking corporation. So, you know, they brought him in and he kind of, you know, took over, for lack of better terms. And, you know, through the 70s and 80s, built it up with great local shows, brought in, you know, in the early stages, the World of Outlaws and the All-Star Sprints. And then later, like the Havoc Tampa Late Model Series. And, you know, we still to this day have Don Martin's name on our logo. It's still Don Martin's Lernerville Speedway. He passed away in the early 90s. But his impact is, you know, still evident. You know, there's still a big, huge poster-sized picture of him in the press box. And, you know, I never met the gentleman myself, but my uncle, who's Dick Swartzlander, who has over 600 feature wins in his career, most of them in Western Pennsylvania, but he also raced at Syracuse, Daytona, Indianapolis. And a lot of that was funded by and sponsored by Don Martin. They were, you know, best friends. So it's very possible that I had interactions with him when I was young at family gatherings and stuff, and I just didn't realize who he was. But, you know, when we go to PRI, when you go to RPM, when you go to other tracks, everybody still remembers Don Martin. And it was, you know, the benevolence that he had. You know, Brad Doty will tell stories, and other drivers will tell stories of, you know, they towed hours to come and race. You know, they had a bad night, they wrecked, and, you know, Don Martin would put them up in a hotel and give them $100 bill or $500 just because he knew, you know, what the drivers put into it. He knew, you know, that money was everything to them. You know, he couldn't replace what happened on the track, but he could help offset, you know, the loss. And, you know, he's in the, you know, National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, and, you know, his fingerprint is still on everything. And, you know, what's frustrating is when we have bad nights, you know, if the track's a little bit, you know, ruddy or dusty, or, you know, we have price increases. One of the common things that people say is Don Martin would be rolling over in his grave if blah, 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 blah. I personally think Don Martin is thrilled that the track is still open, that his name is still on it, that we still have the World of Outlaws and the All-Stars come through every year, that the racetrack is on video games and it's on iRacing. It's still a national recognized track, and I think he would be eternally proud of that.
Now, not only did he own, he became the sole owner in 1981 after he bought out the gentleman that started it and mm-hmm. everything. But didn't he also own a few sprint car teams too that raced locally around there as well?
You know, I don't know if he owned them or it was just a sponsorship thing. Like, he knew that some of the guys were traveling, and he was very good at promotion. So in addition to handing guys money when they had bad nights, wherever he went, even if it was, you know, to go to church or to go to, you know, some trucking convention or something, he always had those silver Learnville Speedway jackets. And when he knew that guys, you know, like Michael Dick Schwartzlander, like Lou Blaney and Bob Waring, you know, he would, you know, help those guys go and travel. And in return, they would have a Learnville Speedway logo on their car. So I know that he owned one of the cars my uncle drove. I don't know, you know, how many cars he drove or how many cars he owned and who all drove for him. But I do know that, you know, even on the Working Woody, the push-off vehicle for the World of Outlaws, for years had Learnville Speedway on it because he understood the marketing and promotion side of it long before social media was ever, you know, even dreamed of. He understood the promotion of it and promoting the track in national magazines and trade papers because, you know, if you promote it and, you know, the word gets out there, people will come.
Right. Now, the track has changed ownerships several times since Don Martin owned it from 1981. So in 2005, it changed hands. Tell us a little bit about bringing in Dirt Motorsports to Learnerville and how that impacted the track.
Yeah, so what eventually became the World Racing Group, at one point it was Boundless Motorsports, it was Dirt Racing, or Dirt Motorsports, and ultimately now became the World Racing Group. And I was actually hired about right after the first year that they took over. So to go from being locally owned to being owned by a national corporation brought even more attention to the track. And in that second year of ownership by the World Racing Group, our general manager at the time, Gary Rich Jr., worked with the folks at the World Racing Group and the World of Outlaws to pilot a two-day late model show, which had never been done at Learnville Speedway. And now the Firecracker 100 is one of the crown jewel events. It's now a three-day show, one of the crown jewel events in, you know, dirt late model racing. So, you know, they just kind of brought it to even a bigger level and, you know, helped me build a modern website. And we branched out into social media and then live streaming races and Dirt Vision. So it was great to have the resources of a national organization. But it's been really a nice transition, you know, for me the last 3 or 4 years when the Thompson family has purchased and taken over the track. There are some benefits to being locally owned too, because now instead of Learnville Speedway being part of a portfolio for the World Racing Group, now it's the, you know, we're back to being everything that is generated from Learnville, it's reinvested into Learnville. So a lot of capital improvements and, you know, just little things like most fans wouldn't even notice, like replacing probably 50-year-old windows and upgrading the concession stand and the video surveillance system to ensure or to promote better driver safety. A lot of that wasn't happening with the World Racing Group, unfortunately. You know, a lot of those profits were going to Charlotte and being shared, you know, throughout their other entities, where now, you know, there's local people that own the track. The Thompson family works tirelessly. I mean, there's somebody there every day working on something. And that's just been really refreshing for the track to be the primary focus of somebody again. So they both, you know, both have their pros and cons, but it's been neat to be there and to be part of that transition.
Yeah, definitely. We are talking with Eric Westendorf. He is the track announcer at Learnerville Speedway, joining us today on the Barbasol Shave phone lines. Eric, what type of track is Learnerville? Obviously, we know it's dirt, but aside from that, is it oval shaped? Is it, you know, what's the shape to it? What's the size? Is it high banking? Is it flat? What are we looking at when we travel to Learnerville and we're going to watch some racing there?
Yeah, so we've built it for a long time as a 4/10 mile dirt track. It is an oval shape, pretty normal oval. It's not, you know, long, narrow paperclip like Williams Grove. And it's not, you know, more of an egg shape like, you know, some tracks tend to be. It's a pretty legit oval. We've actually this year, and we do weekly podcasts, and we've just started picking up again weekly, even though we're not racing. So, You know, Cy Lynch was with us last night. Before that, Brian Schwartzlander, who's won 8-track championships with us. You know, we're up there in a press box, and they cut about half of the banking out of turn four. So it went from about 18 degrees last year, very top dominant track, and they cut a lot of that banking out this year, and it's about 9 degrees now. So it's going to present some challenges to the drivers. So it's kind of evolved over the years. I mean, the general shape size of the track has stayed the same, but we've, you know, widened the entry into turn one, and we've taken the banking out of turn four. You know, it had a history of being a very fast and tacky, and usually wasn't rough, but usually fast and tacky, and that can, it leads to exciting racing, but it can also be hard on equipment. So over the last few years, you know, it tends to be a little bit more hard slick by the end of the night. And a part of that is to ensure that our drivers can, you know, continue through the whole year. And it's not as hard on equipment when the track is like that. And, you know, maybe it's not as exciting for the fans sometimes because they're not as lightning fast, but it usually leads to better racing. So it's just, you know, pros and cons either way. But, you know, kind of the signature of Learnville Speedway, like I mentioned earlier, is that back straightaway. So we have a front stretch, wall, and fence. But from turn one the whole way to turn three, it's wide open. So if you go off the track, you're going for a ride. So, but over the last couple of years with, you know, GPS and timing and scoring kind of evolving with the World of Outlaws, Johnny Gibson has mentioned on his broadcast that they, you know, for their timing and scoring, they mark it as a 3/8 of a mile now because of where the typical racing groove is, as opposed to just measuring the outside of the track. So, you know, not a quarter mile bull ring, not a, you know, big half mile, but great racing surface. So whether it's 3/8 or 4/10, who cares? We put on a heck of a show.
Right. Yeah. The size doesn't matter. It's the guys that show up in the racing that the fans get to see. Speaking of fans, how many fans can you guys get in Learnerville on a non-pandemic, non-restrictive type of racing year, on a normal racing year and racing night, how many fans can show up to Learnerville to watch some great racing?
Yeah, and so it depends on who you ask, but it's, you know, somewhere between 8,000 and 12,000 seat capacity in our grandstands, and it probably also depends on if you're my size. I mean, I'm 6'5", 300 pounds, and, you know, my nickname isn't Big E for no reason. You know, 8,000 to me is different as opposed to, you know, my sons who are, you know, 9 and 10 years old, and, you know, they're 100 pounds. So, you know, it depends on the size of, you know, the fans, but somewhere between that 8,000 and 12,000 on a given Friday night, most of our Fab Four shows, we probably have around, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 on our opening night, our fireworks night. You know, we can probably get up to 4,000 or 5,000 if the weather is good. For our outlaw shows, you know, we can range between 6,000 and 10,000. There was a Silver Cup show, you know, before it was common for these guys to come and race in dirt. We had a Silver Cup show that year, and I think it was 40,000 to win. And we kind of got some inclination over the weekend that it was going to happen, but we were asked by them not to promote it until they could commit to it. So on Tuesday morning that year, we got a call from Tony Stewart and Casey Kane and said, "Hey, we're coming racing. You know, feel free to go ahead and promote that." So we called our local radio stations and TV stations and got the word out. And that influx of NASCAR fans who may not typically come to the track because Tony and Casey were coming came in droves. They crashed our website. The line was the whole way out into the parking lot to get tickets. And, I mean, it was standing room only. It was legitimate standing room only. And there was probably 10,000 people there. But, again, that's wow. Best case scenario. The weather was perfect. We had two big names. It wasn't common like it is now to have Tony and Kyle and Casey race. Back then it was more, I don't want to say it was a novelty, but it was a great opportunity. So it just, you know, a lot of our racing is dependent on weather. So if we get a 50-50, you know, weather Friday night, like it was last night, you know, a lot of the fans just won't come, and maybe we only have 1,500 that night, but there are tracks that would love to have 1,500 any week, much less on a down week. So, you know, our big calling card is we're still the only track in the country, and to my knowledge, even in the world, that runs 410 sprints, super late models, and big block modifieds on a weekly card. So, you know, for the fans, they get to see a mini world finals every Friday night, and you just can't get that anywhere else.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Lernerville Speedway has definitely come a long way since that opening night in 1967 when, Don Martin said that it was an abysmal first year, first couple races. You know, it was not what they expected or thought it would be to where Lernerville is now with drawing 10,000 people and having $40,000 to win purses. So it's definitely come a long way, and it's awesome to see that. Eric, let's talk about a couple races that kind of define Lernerville and that maybe gain national attention. Some key races that Lernerville has every year, and those would be the Don Martin Memorial Silver Cup, the Firecracker 100, which you kind of mentioned a few minutes ago, and then we have the Dirt Car Roundup Steel City Stampede. That's a mouthful.
It gets easier once you do it for 12 years.
Those three races seem to be some of the bigger races that Lernerville has every year. What are the significance of those three races, and then what are the differences between those three races that Lernerville promotes to have at the track every year?
Yeah, and those are the big three, and they all have their kind of unique traits. So the Firecracker started as a two-day event, and I actually personally prefer, and actually in a preseason meeting this year, pitched to the Thompson family and the World Racing Group, let's go back to the two-day format. We just, weather-wise, we never get the whole three programs in as scheduled on the Thursday night, Friday night preliminaries, and then the main event Saturdays. The original two-day format, those heat races were the best racing I've ever seen. And I'm not a late model guy. Our fans know I'm a sprint car guy. I like all the divisions, but when I travel to see the All-Stars, the Outlaws, PA Posse, Attica Fremont, those kind of things. But those Firecracker heat races the first couple of years were hands down the best racing I've ever seen, because you had one legitimate chance to get a good starting position in that 30,000 to win AMA. Now you have, Thursday night and Friday night, you have a chance to get in, and then your best finish on those two nights helps determine your starting position for the Saturday 30,000 to win feature. We also used to have 60, 70 cars. Now with, the kind of Lucas Oil World of Outlaws split, we usually get between, 40 and 50 cars. So, things change and things evolve. And, we had discussed maybe a little bit different format this year, maybe something more along the lines of a Knoxville Nationals or a Kings Royal format instead of what we've done the last couple of years. But, people schedule their vacation around it. They come in camp, they come in on Wednesday, they don't leave until Sunday. And I wouldn't even be surprised if there's a good number of people who never even make it into the track. They're just there for the party. And that's always been a big part of the Firecracker, is we don't want it to be a race. We want it to be an event. And we've spent a lot of blood, sweat, tears, time, and money into making it that. Whereas the Silver Cup is a one-night race. It's still the biggest single-day, highest-paying purse of a single-day event on the World of Outlaws Tour. And the 40th anniversary, it was $40,000. It's back down now to, I can't remember if it's 25 or 30,000 to win, but either way, it's still the biggest single day purse for the World of Outlaws. Most of their big shows are 2 or 3 or 4 day shows. So to me, that's the best night of the summer. You have the best sprint car drivers in the world there. And even that race has evolved. We did twin 30s for a while with, instead of one feature, there were two features. So the first feature, was 10,000 to win. And that was for World of Outlaws points. When that race was over, we inverted the lead lap car. So if there were 20 cars in the lead lap, the guy that won the first feature starts 20th, and now he's got to come the whole way to the front to win again. But it was a non-points race. It was pretty much a cash and carry race. So it was no holds barred, because they were just racing for money at that point. They didn't have to worry about championship. They didn't have, the points were already there for the night. But it was pretty taxing on the drivers and cars too. And you're talking the summer or the month of money. So they're just coming off of the Kings Royal, and the Knoxville Nationals aren't far away. So to burn up a car in one night by running two features is a lot. So we've come back to, just one race format for 25,000 to win. And it's, to me, it's the best night of the summer. Now the Dirt Car Roundup Steel City Stampede is a totally different animal. It's all of the local divisions. Each of the last few years, we've had more than a dozen divisions. we have over 300 cars, and it's practice for everybody on Thursday night. He races for everybody Friday night. And, you know, like a B mains or non-qualifiers race and features all on Saturday. So it's, again, this race is kind of more, you know, for the fans in terms of, if you're a driver, you may get two or three practice sessions on Thursday night. You may get an 8, 10, or 12-lap heat race on a Friday night, and then you'll get a 20 or 25, 30-lap feature on a Saturday. So it's a lot of hurry up and wait, and hurry up and wait. But it's a great way for everyone to get together one last time before we head into a long off season. We run in the middle of October, so the fall foliage off the back straightaway is just, you know, makes for a beautiful, you know, viewing and photographic opportunity. So they're all very unique in their own, you know, nature and format, but they're, you know, there are three cornerstone events.
That sounds like three events that every race fan, dirt race fan, or just race fan in period, should have circled on their calendar. And, you know, I want to thank you, Eric, for taking the time today on this Saturday afternoon to come on the show and talk to us and let us know a little bit and help us learn a little bit more about Lernerville Speedway. It's always great to hear from new tracks and learn about new tracks. And I appreciate you doing that.
I certainly appreciate the opportunity to have some time on your show and, you know, hopefully reach a different fan base. And, you know, if you're interested, I can throw out two tickets if you want to try to give those away somehow through the course of this show, the next show, whatever you want to do. Give me the names on, you know, Twitter where you and I connected, and you know, maybe bring, you know, two new fans to the track that haven't had the opportunity to do so before and see our Fab Four program, because we are very proud to have that, you know, 410 Sprint, Super Late Models, Big Blocks. You know, to have that every week, we're very proud of that. So if you can give away two tickets somehow, I'll be glad to get them in the hands of one of your fans.
All right. Yeah, we'll definitely do that. I'll message you guys here in a little bit on Twitter, and we'll get something set up with that. I'm actually planning on trying to come to Lernerville June 19th myself. So if things work out the way I hope they do, I'll be there that Friday night, and I'll give you guys a shout before I get there, and we'll try to set something up. I'll bring my laptop and my microphone, and I'll do some live shows right there from the track, and we'll try and talk to maybe you at the track and some of the drivers as well. But hopefully we can meet up sometime in June.
Yep. Sounds like a plan. We have a nice little podcast studio, so whatever of our resources you can use, be more than glad to accommodate that as well. So thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
All right. Thank you, and have a great rest of your weekend.
You too. Thanks so much.
Yep. All right. That was Eric Westendorf. He is the track announcer at Lernerville Speedway there in Western Pennsylvania, a half-mile dirt track that has gained a lot of national popularity through the World of Outlaws, through the All-Star Circuit of Champions series as well. They run the big block late models up there. You heard him right there talking about the sprint and the late models that they run on a weekly basis. So if you're in that area, if you're looking for a weekend getaway and you want something, want to try and plan something and catch a race on a weekend, be sure to look up Lernerville Speedway and head out there for a Friday night show. They didn't run last night, but it sounds like they might be getting started up next week. So keep an eye on their website. You can check them out online, LernervilleSpeedway.com, and you can follow their schedule, follow their latest news updates there on the website. So thank you to Eric for joining us today on the Barbasol Shea phone lines. Hope you guys enjoyed the second part of today's show. Stick around, though. We've got more coming up later this evening. We will be live at Wayne County Speedway sometime around 4 o'clock. We'll try and go live to get you guys updated on what's going on at the Speedway. If you're listening and you're going to be there, be sure to look us up. Say hi to us. We'll be coming to you live probably from Twitter, maybe from Facebook Live as well. Definitely here on the Slicks and Sticks Radio Network a few times. So tune in wherever you can and maybe catch some live racing action tonight from Wayne County Speedway. I'm excited about that. I can't wait to get there. It's going to be a few more hours, but we will be there probably around 3:30, 4 o'clock, getting everything set up. Hopefully we'll catch up with Ryan and Jason and the whole crew there at Wayne County as well. So thank you for tuning in so far today. For everybody here at the show, I want to say I hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend and have a great Saturday. And then don't forget to check back in here in just a little bit as we come to you live from Wayne County Speedway. So until we talk to you in just a little bit, I'm your host, Pete. This has been another edition of the Fast Lane Sports Show presented by Ultralight Railway Brake Sticks. We'll talk to you later. We'll be right back.